The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
All right, so welcome to our sixth and final class here in this Dharma Life series. And today we're going to be talking about awakening, Nibbana, as well as living a Dharma life, kind of summing up, putting together what we've covered up to now. But as usual, we want to start with a chance for you to share anything that might have come up in the last week, specifically around the things that we suggested for practice, if you got to them. And one of them was to try that exercise that Diana talked about with blame and the inner, outer, present, past conditions, and to see if that had an effect on a situation where you might have otherwise been tempted to blame yourself or somebody else. And then also anything about the story from the monastery within called It Is All Empty. So I wonder if anyone has any comments. Or questions or anything else. Oh, Beverly. Well, oh, sorry. And then Bess after that.
The blame thing, actually, that really stuck in my head and it resonated all week because it pretty much happened to me every day, something like that. You know, particularly if I forgot something. If I forget something, I immediately think that something I did and my fault, not just a situation or situations in interacting with people, like Diana mentioned. So it came up a lot.
Great. I'm glad. So there were opportunities to see that. Yeah, it's really, there's so many conditions that go into these things. Bess.
There we are. I really appreciated this because I have an elderly friend who is snippy with me occasionally, quite often, actually. And a couple weeks ago, it just hit me wrong, and I was really upset about it. And so this was useful because I looked at it and said, well, I'm not always upset. I mean, she's snippy a lot of the time. Why was I upset this time? Because I was really upset.
Yeah.
I was really upset. And I realized I'd had a challenging morning that morning. And so my patience quotient was perhaps already used up. So so that was really valuable to not blame myself for losing my patience and not blame her for being, you know, so darn snippy all the time. This was just a confluence of circumstances that all at one time.
Nice. That was such a beautiful description of it, too. Did you want to add anything, Diana?
I was just going to add, it's implicit in what you're saying, but I maybe like to ask explicitly, and it was helpful, right, to see this? Did it help kind of like untangle a knot or loosen something up? Or
yes, it untangled a knot, maybe not so fearful for the future, because I really don't want to be upset. And I was afraid, you know, she's snippy a lot. So I was afraid that I was going to be upset again.
Great. Thank you, Bess. Thank you for sharing that.
Nice. Okay, Claire, I see your hand up.
Yeah, thank you. So I guess I had a question. I was trying to do it, and I think it's a great exercise in general, trying to figure out conditions that led people to do certain things. But I was having a hard time, a couple things, with differentiating between the inner and the outer and the past and the present. I was seeing a lot of conditions. I was thinking of a particular situation where my father-in-law did something hurtful. And I was thinking of the conditions that might have led to it, but I had a problem, number one, categorizing the conditions. And then number two, like, I felt like part of me was just imagining, like, with it, when it's someone else, how do we know for sure what led them to do something? Like, it did help to think, oh, well, maybe he was having a hard day or whatever, but like, how do you, like, How do you do it when it's someone else and you're not sure exactly what caused them to act that way?
Yeah, I'll just say something and then Diana may want to add. I think Rob even says in that article that we can do this for others, but it's much more dicey for exactly the reason that you said. It's hard for us to know the inner conditions of others. And so in that case, we might want to start with what's happening for us. So if your father-in-law did something hurtful, you might feel angry about that or put off or whatever word is appropriate. And then look in yourself for those conditions that are related to your feeling about that. And maybe only then think about him in that way. It's always a little dicey to do this for others. Do you have more, Diana?
Yeah, just add that the purpose, the function of this exercise is to find more ease, to find less suffering, and to soften the sense of self. It's not to get to the bottom of exactly why this happened and to figure it out, right? There's this wish, like, okay, if I completely understand it, then everything will be better. But if we kind of keep in mind, the reason why we're doing this is to, I don't know, loosen up the sense of me versus them, or I'm hurt and now I'm feeling tight and constricted or something like that. If we use that as a guide, I think that could help us.
Yeah. Chris.
I missed last week's class, and I just want to thank you, first of all, to bringing Rob Burbet's teachings in. Onto the class. I used to listen to his talks from the Gaia House. It's on Dharma Seed. He's a wonderful speaker. He has a very empty kind of approach. It's very loving. And I've not read his book, but the exercise is just, it's primo, it's tops. I mean, it seems like anything that arises, that's when you're in sort of an embodied presence and you're looking at those ruminations or regrets in particular, that you can use this structure to almost use it as just a light probe to kind of tick away at that tangle that's stuck in your body or in your ruminations. So thank you very much. It was a great exercise.
Great. Thank you. Yin Kuei.
I'm also wanting to go back to that exercise, the inner, outer, past, present. And it was applying to a situation currently in my life, and I'm having a hard time understanding the inner past condition. I don't quite get that at all. Like, I don't know what would be a past condition.
Like something, yeah. So something within you that was affecting the present situation. I'm sorry?
From the past? Is that what
you mean? Yeah, from the past. So I've sometimes noticed that I have certain views that I carry because of my training, for example. Like, I was trained as a scientist. And so, you know, I'm not a scientist anymore. That's not what I do. But it shaped certain assumptions that I make or ways of seeing things. And so sometimes things like that could be past inner conditions that are affecting a situation. Of course, there are other things too. Maybe Diana would offer other examples, but that's one thing that comes to mind.
Thank you, Kim. I like that example. And for me, it was helpful in that story. The person, the past inner was, I think that there's a little bit of tension in the earlier conversation those two people had. And there's this residue of this little bit of tension that wasn't quite resolved. And maybe even Bess was saying that she doesn't want to be afraid of having this conversation with her friend. So being afraid would be a past inner condition. I mean, Bess was saying she didn't want to be hesitant. You didn't use these words, Bess, but so that would be like a past, something that happened in the past and still has some residue, has some effect today.
So something like a latent, you know, like a trigger, like I have these buttons kind of a thing. Like, is that what you mean? Like, that's sort of associated with some selfing that hasn't gotten resolved yet. So when that closer to some sort of past blob.
Yeah, we don't arrive in the present moment as a blank slate. And yeah, unless we're a Buddha or something, but I don't even know in that case. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, do you have time? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, we could do another short one. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I hope it's short. It just made me think of an example that's really just like that, and it's actually kind of up for me, which is in the field I work in, which you know is in software engineering. I maybe more frequently than others come across people who, for whatever sort of reasons, treat me like an idiot. And I'm so far from an idiot that it can create rage. And I don't know why. And because of past experience, I want to say, okay, it's because I'm female, but I don't know that. And I have a lot of trouble because, it has happened a lot, and there's a lot of collective kind of past experience around that. And then I don't know how to engage the person because people like that frequently, they're not receptive if you try to say, you're treating me like an idiot, and they're kind of cracked about the way I do it. And so it can actually make me angry all day.
Yeah. There's so many of these factors.
And maybe I'll just say, yeah, it's hard to know exactly why people do, like to know exactly why. We might imagine it's because you are a woman. It also could be because they didn't get their favorite breakfast that morning and they're mad about it.
Although it tends to be repetitive because they tend to people you know. So, but anyway, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we hear you on that one. So.
Okay, it's happened to others.
So we'll. This is great. First of all, I'm just delighted that several of you were able to engage and come up with some interesting effects from looking at this method that Rob was offering for loosening up the conditions. So just by way of transition, probably we've noticed then that our mind is involved in these things, right? It has past conditions, it has present conditions, it's one of the factors. In fact, we're creating some degree of our experience. We talked about this last time. So we are creating all the time. It's not like you can decide that you're going to stop creating immediately. So the Buddha, one way to see the Buddhist path is that we have a choice about how and what we create. And we can create a self, or we could create a path. And that's often the choice that we have. So with that, Diana will start off our teaching.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you. Yeah, this idea, we either create a self or we create a path. And this path, of course, is towards greater freedom and greater ease and happiness, peace, awakening. And this ability to even see that there might be a difference, or even to see that there is this creation of a self and that we can loosen that up and even let go of it, is what we might call wisdom, is to be able to make this distinction. And in this tradition, wisdom is the gateway to liberation. So a lot of our practices that we do are in support of wisdom. And in fact, here's a quote from the suttas that I like. Just as the footprints of all living beings that walk fit into the footprint of the elephant, and the elephant's footprint is declared to be their chief by reason of its size. It's just saying that the elephant's footprint is the biggest, therefore it's the chief. So too, among the steps that lead to enlightenment, the faculty of wisdom is declared to be their chief for the attainment of enlightenment. So maybe we're not saying anything we don't already know, but just this highlighting the importance of wisdom, which is what and connecting it to awakening, which is what we'll be exploring today. And of course, wisdom is a faculty we all have. It's not something that people are completely devoid of, but it's something that this capacity to discern and to distinguish, as I said earlier, maybe as Kim had said, between making a self or making a path, or maybe we can even generalize it even more, the capacity to say, this is helpful and this is not helpful. And we can say helpful for whatever it is we're doing. Today, we're talking about greater freedom and liberation. But maybe one practical way to think about this is one measure of wisdom is the extent that you can get yourself to do things you don't like doing, but you know will result in happiness. Mm-hmm. And refrain from things you like doing, but you know will result in pain and harm. So wisdom is holding up, you know, this, is it helpful, is it not helpful, is one of the highest criteria, not just is it pleasurable or is it what I usually do. But wisdom at its best, it comes from a deep and direct investigation of life, the way that life is here and now. So wisdom, it's more than just reason, and it's more than just rationalization or rational thought. It doesn't require book learning or doesn't require study, though sometimes book learning and study can be a support. It can't be a substitute, though, but it can be a support. And this is a little bit what Kim and I were pointing to when we talked about I'm looking at the suttas, and that sometimes there's things there that might trigger some ideas or might trigger some recognition within ourselves. But probably many of you know that wisdom is one of the five faculties. And when we talk about the five faculties that are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, that wisdom is balanced by faith. And what do I mean by faith here? I mean a warm-hearted engagement, a warm-hearted willing to, like a confidence that this seems like the right way to go. I don't haven't experienced it for myself yet, but this makes sense to me. It feels like it's not the right direction, the right thing to do. And probably all of us, not probably, all of us did have this when we started a meditation practice. Before you ever meditated, with some kind of faith, like, okay, I'm going to try this. Seems like it's going to work. And many of us might have different reasons that gave us that idea before we ever sat down. But if we don't have enough wisdom, there can be this overemphasis on just acquiring knowledge, just reading one more Dharma book, taking one more class, rather than actually sitting, rather than actually meditating and having experiences, meditative experiences, or just allowing the mind to settle down a little bit so that we can gain some more familiarity with it. And if we sometimes we can think that, oh, if I have more wisdom, that might be translate into these, in some ways, are kind of like these desperate attempts to think our way to enlightenment, to awakening, right? We know how to solve problems with thinking, and we kind of like choose that same methodology with awakening, but it's different. So when faith and wisdom are in balance, then there's a quality of balanced and genuine inquiry, something that we talked about at the first class, and this heartfelt steadiness and this ability to persevere, as well as a humility. So wisdom is not all about just acquiring more knowledge, but it's really engaging in it with our experience. And then when we are able to do this, when we're able to develop wisdom or to act from wisdom, or create the conditions for wisdom, it allows a different type of seeing. That is, things are realized or discovered or revealed. There's a way in which there's a certain type of knowing that's different than feverishly trying to figure it out or probing deeply or trying really hard to understand what is there. So certainly we need a certain amount of that, right, to use our rational thinking, but it also has this open-hearted, warm-hearted stance as well. So with wisdom, we bring ourselves to a place where we allow experience to show its nature to us, to show its characteristics. And when we do this, we start seeing. We start seeing the underlying building blocks through which we build the conventional world. We start to see the underlying building blocks through which we create that conventional sense of a self. We start to see the underlying roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, and the ways, different ways that they show up in our life. And then, of course, as long as the roots are still there, they're all sprouting plants. But wisdom allows us to see and to recognize and to understand in a different way. Oh, okay, this is coming out of greed or hatred or delusion. Often we're not using those words, strong words, but so this different way of seeing, this development of wisdom allows a different type of seeing in which things are revealed or realized or discovered. And we might call this insights, that wisdom allows insights. And maybe a loose definition of insight is a understanding or a realization or a way of seeing that brings a decrease in dukkha. A way of understanding that brings a diminishment, a lessening of dukkha, that undermines that. It's a way of seeing that cuts or melts or undermines something on which dukkha is depending on. So rather than, you know, just smoothing it over, it's taking out the foundation from, that's one of the foundations from which is creating the dukkha. And this is really based primarily on our experience of what decreases dukkha. It's not so much a belief. It's experience for that we know firsthand. And sometimes we know this, that even though when we first sit down to meditate, for example, it might just be really uncomfortable. Maybe the mind has been all day busy racing, trying to get things done, figuring things out, or feeling agitated. And then when it comes time to sit, there's a certain momentum that's going, and there's these thoughts, I shouldn't be sitting. I need to get up and do this and take care of that and do this. But if we have these experiences often enough, there's a certain type of wisdom, like, okay, this is how this meditation is going to begin, with the inner critic thinking that I need to be doing something different, with the mind racing around. That's okay. I'm going to sit here as best as I can. It's kind of this wisdom of having that comes from this experience of knowing that if we're able to stay, then things will stay meditating, then things will settle down. So, of course, this is an analogy that I like, is that, and this also comes from Robert Bea, that one day you're out walking and you turn a street corner and you suddenly hear a loud and menacing growl. And a ferocious and hungry-looking tiger appears, and it looks like it's about to leap, and you feel terror, and maybe you run, or maybe you leap, or scream, or whatever it might be. But if you notice on closer inspection that this tiger isn't real, in fact, it's just a holographic projection with a sound recording. And maybe you start to see, oh, there's the projector and there's the speaker. And then just immediately, right, the problem, the terror dissolves when there's a different way of seeing, different way of understanding. So in some ways, we can understand insights, and there's a way in which we can see things differently, that maybe at our first impressions were one way, but then we can start to understand, oh, there's a different interpretation here. There's a different way in which we can see this. And so this different way, this seeing, this understanding allows a deep letting go. And this, so if when we, in that analogy, you know, the letting go, the ending of terror, this letting go of having to make things different, make the situation different, maybe that's not a good analogy because we have that biological imperative that will cause us to run to. But if we can see in some radical way the inconstant nature of the world we live in, if we can see in some radical way that all the ideas and concepts we live by are just that, ideas and concepts. And if we can start to see some of this stressfulness, the suffering, the unsatisfactoriness that's integrated in, into the way that we are interacting with our environment, if we can see these in some deep way, then letting go just naturally happens. Just like with that holographic tiger, when you start to see, oh, it's just a hologram, then there's a letting go. And if the letting go has been deep enough, the attachments might come back, but now things are different because you have had that experience. That letting go experience, now there's an understanding that that's possible. Maybe you didn't even know that that was possible. And maybe there's a story that I'll tell briefly, that when I was growing up, sometimes my parents would give us chocolate, you know, as a treat. And it was when I was growing up, it was Hershey's chocolate. And this was, you know, we were all excited. Yay, we're going to get chocolate. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I tasted Belgian chocolate. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is so different than Hershey's chocolate. And I didn't have to force anything to happen. Just my understanding had shifted about what's possible with chocolate. So it's in the same way when there's this deep letting go, now you have this understanding of what's possible. And then your views shift, your understanding shift about your earlier experiences. So in this way, wisdom helps support seeing things, having realizations, discovery, insights. And these insights support letting go. And this letting go is a way towards liberation and freedom. So with that as a kind of an introduction to this topic or to this idea, now we would like to invite you all to discuss this amongst yourselves. And the question is, what supports in your experience, what has been supportive for insights or new understanding or new ways of seeing things or realizing things? What has been a support for you that helps you to have insights or see things differently? And maybe to support us, we'll just be silent here just for a little bit and give you just a minute to think about this before you go into the small groups. So what supports the development of insights in you? What supports the development of insights in you? So now we'd like to put you into some breakout rooms. There'll be about three of you in a room. And we can go, I like to do this in the spiral method, so there's no pressure on one person to have a big everything all figured out, but just to say one point, and then it goes to the second person and they say one point, and then it goes to the third person and they have one point, and then it comes back around to the first. Just one idea that you have about what supports the development of insight in you. And let's do it in numerical order by day of your birth. If you're born on January 31st, on the 31st, you would go last, for example. And then when Kim is ready to zoom us into our breakout rooms, I think that's
good. I am ready, but I see David raising his hand.
Yeah, just a quick question. So in the groups, as we're going around circles, will we have a chance to discuss the points that other people raise, or is it simply point in the groups, or is there time to go into depth about what someone raises?
I was thinking more point.
Okay.
But this is a good point, because there's sometimes it's nice, right, to kind of like talk about things. But one advantage of going point is it allows the introverts and maybe people who don't have it well thought out yet to just offer one thing and not have the pressure of having a big conversation. So let's do that.
Okay. Diana, can I just offer something out that when it comes to someone, they bow, they say what they want to say and then they bow. So the next person knows the person's kind of finished with their statement. And it can just sort of get it moving. You really know they've stopped saying what they wanted to say. And then the next person, I find that works out really well for me. I don't know if people want to do that, but then you know the person's finished with what they wanted to say.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Okay. And Kim, are you saying, was that a yes?
I'm saying goodbye. Oh. Off you guys go.
Bye.
See you soon. Enjoy.
Okay. So poor Beverly's taking care of the bird that flew into the window, I think, or something. So welcome back. And of course, we would love to hear from you all. How was that? Did you have any insights, any aha moments about what helps support the arising of insights? And or you can comment about the format. We gave you a little time beforehand, not a lot of time, but we gave you a little time to think about how was that helpful, the going around in circles, or anything you'd like to share with us. Everybody's stunned, just maybe like Beverly's little bird.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, who's speaking? I can't quite see. Was this Yim Kui?
I started to, but Chris, do you want to go first? Or?
I'll just say very quickly, I listened to all the classes this past week, and people have sort of addressed this group thing about small groups. And what's fun, everyone's a little disturbed about being kind of tossed, given a question and just tossed into it. On the other hand, there's an improvisational quality to it, like you don't have much protection. You don't fall back and like, I have to make some statements here or three supporting sentences or however you want to appear in the world, right? You don't have a chance. You're kind of looking at new faces and it's disturbing, yet really fruity stuff comes out of it, I think.
Thank you, Chris. And let's see, Yankwe was unmuted and I think Elizabeth, you were unmuted also. So can we do Yankwe and then Elizabeth?
Okay, so I wanted to make a comment about what is insight. That's exactly what are we talking about, what is insight? And I realized I was thinking of insight as those aha moments in terms of more like a change of my view, a change of perspective, a clear seeing of what the truth or a wider view, that's what I thought insight was. And in the small group, I had a different idea that that's not insight. That in fact, what insight is a verb. It's actually it's that moment when I'm able to respond to the situation differently from before. So it's not just having, oh, I got it. Oh, it's like this, sort of that mental clicking. That's actually more like an embodied experience that leads to, liberation, leads to some more spaciousness. Anyway, so that idea, it's an idea, but that idea got me kind of excited about, and there was this insight happened in everyday life, big insights, small insights, blah, blah, blah.
Great, great. Thank you, Yan Kui. I appreciate this. Looking at this a little bit differently and highlighting the embodied aspect of it. Kim, I don't know if you have anything you'd like to add.
I think the line in that case, the line between wisdom and insight might get a little bit blurred. I probably would have leaned toward wisdom as being an enactment in the moment and insight more about the seeing just because of the structure of the word. But I don't like to get too much into fine details of what's this or that. It's all in that realm. So it's good enough.
Great. Thank you. Insight. I see. Oh, I see. Insight. Okay, here we go. Elizabeth.
So our small group went a little bit differently than other small groups I've been in this class and then also in other groups. And it was kind of a speed round. So that was really cool because we got so many different ideas out there and nobody had a big story to tell about them. They just said the thing and then it just moved on. And I liked the bowing was really helpful especially because people were being so brief. And I just felt very touched by the things that I heard. So I thought that was, wonderful and something different that I hadn't experienced before.
Okay. Great, great. Thank you, Elizabeth. Yeah, Kim and I have talked about this a number of times, how right when we were all physically in the same space, those of us that are in the roles that me and Kim are in now, we could see by the expression on people's faces, the level of laughter or frowning, like how groups are going. But now we don't know. We just send you off and you disappear and we don't know. So we're learning and figuring this out. So thank you for the feedback.
We had some good laughs.
Oh, good.
Part of it.
great. I had thought at one time I thought, maybe I should pop into these rooms and see how they're going. But then that feels like that's like a rude intrusion, but thank you for sharing. Yes. Anybody else have a comment or something you'd like to share? I see Stephen and then Catherine.
Just to add on to Elizabeth's remark a little bit, for me, I think it was one of the things that I've had, in a small group. I think that we found that to say something meaningful, we didn't necessarily have to speak a long time, and it was honest and we kind of filtered through a number of emotions too, in the course of going around. So just thanks everybody for that.
Great. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for sharing that. And Catherine.
I've always found the small group work of Dharma classes very challenging. And I feel frightened to even consider it. And I keep doing it. And I'm just really, really grateful to everyone I've been in with a small group, how kind people are and how warm. And it seems like for me, it's gotten worse with the pandemic since I don't talk to anyone else. So it's like, so thank you very much, all of you, for your kindness in a small group with me.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that, Catherine. Thank you. I used to be one of those people. I'm like, no way, I'm not going into a small group. And it wasn't until I had some experiences, these are really nice people here. And yeah, Kim?
It is kind of a skill that we learn over time. I don't know that we ever get totally perfect at it, and that doesn't really matter. Just get used to it. So that's great.
Yes. So maybe we'll take a break here. Maybe we'll take a little bit of time here to stretch our legs, and we'll come back at 4:05 or so, and then we can begin again. Okay, so see you soon.